Mrs. Fishel, reel two.
Well, my husband did not know very much about Yugoslavia, but he had to tell them whatever he knew. It was run by a manager, but he could give them, answer all their questions.
What was the reaction of the Czechoslovak people towards the German occupation from your personal observation? Did they conform, or did they resist, or what?
They resisted, but now I'm perhaps going to say something nasty. The Czechs are not very courageous, and so very many didn't really help the Germans, but they didn't make any obstacles. They were quite pleased. Very many were quite pleased with the Germans.
Why should they be pleased?
Well, they also were quite... They helped very often to get rid of Jewish Germans, and they tried to be able to live with the Czechs, with the Germans. Of course they hated them, and my son's friends afterwards told me what a horrible time they had. While I was in Prague with my husband before we went to Theresienstadt, I knew very little about what Czechs did towards the Germans or against the Germans, because we were not allowed out very much, and whenever we were out, we had the Jewish star already, we had to wear the Jewish star, we were not allowed to use a tram, we had to walk everywhere. The car, of course, was taken away, and so one had very little chance of meeting people. We had very good friends who came to visit us. Our friends were of mixed marriages. There was either the husband Jewish and the wife, German, Gentile, or vice versa, and they came to visit us, but at 8 o'clock they had to be back, like we, nobody on the street anymore after 8 who had any connection with Jews. So life was restricted, you had to be careful about whatever you did, shopping was difficult, but I at the time had a job at home. I had learned to make paper flowers. It sounds horrible, but they were beautiful. Every petal was painted, and they looked like real. And through various friends and connections, I got a lot of work and earned a little money like that. It was quite interesting. Through friends we met a Viennese lady who ran the top Nazi shop in Prague, the amber shop, the amber from Königsberg, that is, you know what I'm talking about.
The city on the Baltic.
That's right, the Baltic where the Junkers used to be, the German Junkers. Now there it was a lot of amber, and this lady from Austria was a great and famous potter, and she used that amber to beautify pottery with silver and gold, and she got the best shop and the best street in Prague, and had to have a beautiful showcase for amber, for various amber jewelry and her pottery with amber. And she visited me once through friends, and saw me make those paper flowers for the beautiful townhouse of aristocracy, and thought that is just what she wants for her showcase and her window. And when I said, how can you make put Jewish flowers into the Königsberg Nazi window. So she said, I am allocated so and so many mark to buy fresh flowers every day from my window. It's nobody's business what I do with that money, and I want your flowers. So for many, many months, my flowers were in the Nazi window, which I found quite interesting and amusing. She paid very nicely, she came to visit us regularly, and we were great friends.
At this time, how did you think the war was going to end? Did you think that the Nazis might win?
Yes. Yes, I did. Because we knew very little. I mean, the papers were censored, the beginning looked very much for the Germans. And besides, later on in Oederan, or Auschwitz of course not, but in Oederan, I knew nothing what was going on. Sometimes I got a German newspaper swindled into the camp by the German workers, and then I could translate it and find out what the Germans wanted people to know. So when I came here, I knew nothing about the Normandy or anything like that.
Were you ever arrested?
No. I was never arrested, nor was my husband, except that he was taken away for answering questions for this hour.
When was it that you were taken away to Theresienstadt?
I believe we were taken away end of August or beginning of September 42. We were the Jewish community sent out papers, and very many of our friends had gone before us, and the community had arranged for people to help one another for packing, and I had baked breads or biscuits or cakes and had helped packing for various people of I was sent to during the month before that. So it never came as a surprise. One was prepared, and I had prepared clothes and cups and saucers, plastic things, aluminium things, because I had listened to other people, and so I was prepared for it and was not really startled or horrified. We knew it was coming, and so we packed up, and friends came to help me pack our things. We were allowed 50 kilo each. And they packed all very neatly, shoes in one case and clothes in the other, and whatever you took with you in the third case. And when they left at 7:45, because they had to be at home at 8, I undid everything and repacked and divided everything properly. Shoes and clothes and food and whatever we thought we needed in each case. And that was a good thing, because cases were stolen when you arrived in Theresienstadt. You only got part of your luggage and not the whole.
Stolen by whom?
Stolen by the government and the Czech guards who helped. Because this property was then distributed amongst people who had nothing at all, who came from Vienna, from Yugoslavia, from other places, and where the Germans had taken away everything. So that went into a communal storeroom, and that was then distributed amongst other people. I cannot blame them, but I was glad that I didn't only get shoes and no clothes, and of no clothes and no shoes, so that I had, we all, my young nephew, who was 12 at the time, and my husband and I, we had everything we really needed.
You say you expected it, but yes. The information you got about Theresienstadt before you went, was it by rumor or by official notification?
No, by official notification 2 days before we left. That was quite official, and it was organized by the Jewish community, headquarters in Prague, and that was, we had transport. We were taken to the fair building, a big where the fairs were, the big business fairs, and there were big tents and marquees, and there we stayed for one night, I think. Yes, I think it was one night, and then we were transported to Theresienstadt in cattle trucks on the train, but with seats in it, and that was the first really most disturbing experience, because one lady got mad, and one was scared. It was dark, and you sat there, and people, we didn't know what was going to happen, so that was the first real scare one had, and some people just broke up, couldn't take it. But we did, and my little nephew was with us, and when we got out in this railway station, at the time Theresienstadt did not have a railway station, you got out at a place called Bauschowitz, and from there you had to walk about half an hour to the Theresienstadt camp, and we were not allowed to walk, for instance, we were not allowed to walk on the footpath. You had to walk on the road, and my husband's firm had quite a lot of employees there already in Theresienstadt, who were in higher positions because they had been brought out on earlier transports. And there was one of them who had been the director in one of the Czech factories, who was what they used to call the police. And the police had uniforms with a lot of yellow or gold braid, and caps with stars, golden stars, and it looked like a musical, like quite idiotic for what they really were doing. They had to keep the Jews in order on the streets in Theresienstadt, and they conducted these tours towards. You were not allowed to walk on the street to your work without being guarded. You only walked in a crocodile with guards in the beginning. Later on, this was stopped. But at the time we came to Theresienstadt, I could, for instance, not go to the joinery. I made coffins. I had to cut the wood on saw, and then nail the coffins. But I was not allowed to walk on my own to that joinery or carpentry. I had to join a crocodile, which was taken there by either a police lady or a policeman, so that we did not escape on the street. I don't know where we could have escaped to, but that was how it was done in the beginning. And I worked there for 100 days, at what they called the Hundertschaft, the 100 days, and then, because of my training for painting and drawing, and my little diploma of the art class I had taken with me, I was put into the art and craft department, which of Theresienstadt, which is a chapter, a very astonishing chapter of Theresienstadt, because there one painted and made art and little art boxes, lampshades with the flowers or figures, and you had to design it and then prepare it. I myself was soon managed to be a designer. I made the design of bunches of flowers or of children playing with flowers, all very sweety-sweety. And I had two young girls who copied them onto vellum, first vellum paper and by and by less good paper, and another one then made a lampshade or a box of it. They were various departments, but my work was designing, making the designs for all sorts of boxes, sizes, and mats, table mats, and so on. This particular work was for the Germans who ran this camp, because they had they sold these articles. Where I don't know where they were. They were taken to Prague, and from there they were distributed, and more I do not know about that. But I later on, one had to also work for the German department there who ran the camp. The camp was had a Jewish government under the thumbs of the German administration. I myself had never anything to do with the Germans except when they came to watch us paint. Especially the second, his name was Rahm, he was an Austrian stable boy, I was told. I don't know anything about him personally except that he spoke the Austrian dialect. And that he asked me what I had painted before and how much money I got for my paintings, and that he stood behind me watching me paint miniatures, which I have here still, and with the shepherd dog or Alsatian standing next to him and a pistol hanging at his waist. So it wasn't a very easy way, but one gets used to everything, and you just went on painting and answering his questions. And but this particular work was well looked at by the Germans, and consequently through this, that I was able to work in this department, I saved my husband and my mother and my little nephew to be sent off to Auschwitz, because I was allowed to save my family as long as I worked there. But after my husband's death and the Russians coming nearer and the war getting less happy for the Germans, they tried to have less inhabitants in this Theresienstadt. So they sent away a lot of people, and my particular work was not appreciated at the time. So I was sent away then, a few months after my husband died, and my little nephew was sent in the last transport 3 days after I left, and we never heard of him again. My mother remained in Theresienstadt, and when I returned from Auschwitz and Oederan, I met her there again.
Do you know the date that you left Theresienstadt?
It was in July 45, 5.
So you were in Theresienstadt for...
I left Theresienstadt for Auschwitz in October 44.
So you were there approximately 2 years?
Yes.
Were you paid for this work?
I was, in the beginning, nothing at all, and then we were paid with Theresienstadt money, which of course was completely useless outside, but with that money we could, for instance, buy a little food or old socks which they had taken away from other people. They had opened up shops in Theresienstadt to make it look beautiful for the Swedish Red Cross. And for a few months we were paid. I still have money here. I lent them to the museum for that exhibition. And with that money we were allocated either a tin of sardines or a pair of pants or whatever we needed most urgently. The whole thing was absolutely perverted, silly, ridiculous. One just could only laugh, either cry or laugh. There's nothing else we could do at the time. I personally laughed because I found make the best of it.
Did you see any visits by the Red Cross?
Yes, I saw that one with the visit by the Red Cross, and not only did I see that, but belonging to that art department, the head of that department was a Dutch great artist called Jo Speer, who was a marvelous draftsman and a very good organizer. And he had to make a prospectus like the travel agency prospectuses now. He made lithographies of 12, as far as I remember, of the various aspects in Theresienstadt, the bakery, the schools, the hospital, the gardens, what have you, 12. And I belonged to a set of painters who had to make they were black and white prints, lithographs, and I had to paint all the skies, the one after another, for I don't know how many of these books came into. I think Günter Adler has one still, and I had to paint all the light blue skies to make it look happy. I usually painted a lot of flowers, which the Germans liked because they were happy. So I had my work. I enjoyed my work. I enjoyed the people with whom I shared my work. They were all artists or teachers. They were very musical. There was a lot of whistling and singing while we painted, and the atmosphere was very, very good and friendly in those particular rooms where I worked. So this helped me perhaps never to be bitter or to be able to take it, because I had good work and good friends there. My husband became very ill. His health deteriorated rapidly because of the food, and he had had the cancer of the thyroid, and he ought to have had protein and various drugs, which of course he could not get. And so he became thinner and thinner, and then he had ileus, his vowels knotted, and he was operated on and died a month after the operation of blood poisoning, which of course was quite natural because it was the hospital was not really clean, and the chap, Mr. Ram, who came with the dog to watch me paint, he also went to the operating theater with the dog and watched operations. So you can imagine that it was not very sterile, and consequently very many people died after operations, and my husband died a month or 3 weeks after the operation of what they called malnutrition. And he was buried, cremated in Theresienstadt, and then the ashes were put into cartons, and they were then put into the ramparts of the old beautiful fortress of Theresienstadt, which was a work of art, the fortress. It was built 1700 and so on by the Emperor Joseph, built by Italian builders and architects. And the five big barracks where we lived partly, they were very beautiful. And I had lovely big courtyards and pillars and loggias, and they were very beautiful to look at. So was the church. And the main buildings where the generals used to live as long as it was a fortress, and then for a while our painting department was housed in one of those beautiful houses, yellow and green, like the old Habsburgs had in all their palais. And Theresienstadt itself had a very good climate, and it was a nice place if you were not in forced labor with so many people pressed together in dormitories and in rooms, in three-tier beds and bunks, and with the dreadful food, as the place itself was rather pleasant and beautiful, with nice surroundings.
How dreadful was the food?
Well, the food was, the food was mainly soups with bits of meat or potatoes or one dumpling or something. It wasn't sufficient. And in the morning you had coffee made of the pips of pears and apples, and you got bread, and you got slices of marge for the whole week, and at lunch you got queued at various kitchens, and you got either soup with a bit of meat or vegetable, or a dumpling with a sauce, and in the evening you got again some coffee or some soup, and that was what you got. You had to divide your bread and see how you got on. Of course, sometimes one did get a parcel from Prague, and then you could have a little more.